Blog Talk Radio.
Never violate the codes of the streets, and I would never make a promise that I know I couldn't keep, and I would never testify, cop out for a plea, or surrender information on my boys to the police, and you could never catch me on the block without a strap, and I would never pull it out unless I'm out to black, and I could never forget my homies dying for their scratch, but ever pouring out liquor for them, God to the back, and I would.
Fred Hatton, Fred Hatton Jr., two of my friends in the building, man. Appreciate you coming out to fuck with him in the building. I see y'all out there, man. I just want y'all to know one motherfucking thing. I would never, ever violate the codes in the streets, and I would never make a promise that I know I couldn't keep.
Hands up, eyes open, the fist clear. Face and we get some of this good shit. This should be the chairman checking in. Now, when I say cold of the sea, we talking about the Panther Cubs. That's not the party club, that is. I would never violate the cold of the sea. Would never speak nor serve the interests of our enemies. And if I say that I'm with you, we'll come get you. You best believe that like bad luggage, we'll never leave. Now, of course, I can never say that I never will go broke. Because sad to say that we ain't never had this shit roll. Well, I can never say how it's gonna go. One thing for sure, or two things for certain. They know to shut up motherfuckers like us. They want to kill us. Close up in the casket. Read a quick verse and close the motherfucking curtains.
Never be sad, I would, I like a hoe. Never been drunk, I'll never let it slide. Never let it go. Never ever, never ever ever. No, get on my level hoe. Or go get a shovel hoe. It's never in question for my manhood, I get down. I'll never switch, never stick, never sit down. I never hesitate to squeeze a nigga six rounds. I never squat to take a piss, who's the bitch now?
I would never put profit over politics, principle, nor our people. I would never sell my soul. Never put bullshit in the business and never place good upon the evil. You see, why I'm determined to die before being dishonored. Committed to being captured and killed before being capitulated. And that would be perfected, pushing this shit to the motherfucking limit. And if need be, pull the motherfucking trigger with a pistol without no hesitation. I will pass the cover to my last breath, to my last goddamn roar. And we'll never forget what them pigs did at 4:35 a.m. in 1969 Chicago on December the 4th. Never, never, never.
I never ran, never will, I ain't never scared. It's in my bloodline, the realest nigga ever bred. And that's some of the realest shit that I done ever said. And I can die, but through my lyrics, I ain't never dead. I never disrespect my mama, never disrespect her mama neither. I never turn my back on Jesus. I never get caught off in the system, I believe her. Man that follows man, ain't a man, and I'm a leader.
I will never cross my comrades and never forsake our fight for freedom. And if you listen to my second verse, let me say it again just in case y'all weren't listening. I will never put profit over politics, press with nor our people. I will never disrespect the legacy of Minister UEP. Never betray the Black Panther Party. And never bow down and lay down the legacy at the feet of our enemies. Never, never, never. I am a Panther Cub by birth and by battle. This is my bloodline and my prison time. And when it be, now wherever the enemy, if they try to hijack this legacy, wherever it be, not on our watch. But we'll never, never, never have it. Never, 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 never.
Never gonna turn cold, my nigga. I can never trade. I never cross my homies out. That ain't how I'm made. And I never had not one regret on how I was raised. I'm from the ghetto where I slum and rap it every day. Never knew no other way. This ain't gonna never change. Never gonna bite my tongue. Fuck what a nigga say. 100 with myself. I swore to God I'd stay the same. And when I finally got my paper, I was on my game. Never talk a nigga down. Do your thing, dawg. Never hate a dude for trying. That's the same, dawg. Get your motherfucking money. That's the same, dawg. Too many homies die young. Feel my pain, y'all.
October 23rd, 24th, 2016. All roads lead to Oakland, California. Lonely legacy of Black Panther Party. Protected, respected, and never, never neglected. Never, never.
Okay, it's roll one, Frompson interview with camera left, Fred Hampton.
H-A-M-P-T-O-N, Deputy Chairman of the Illinois Panther Party. Camera right, David Hilliard, H-I-L-L-I-A-R-D, Chief of Staff, National Black Panther Party. Gentlemen, what do you think the demonstrations on the first day of the trial accomplished?
I think that they were very educational in the sense that they exposed further the fascist characteristics of the courts in racist America. What happened to Bobby today was very characteristic of Nazi Germany. The judge, Julius J. Hoffman, is the champion of fascism. The man is a mechanical fascist in a robe. He's a lunatic, and he needs to be removed from the court system.
Well, those are words. I mean, specifically, what is it that's bothering you about the judge and what happened in the courtroom?
First of all, the man is an old, senile fascist, as I mentioned. He's not a man that's capable of rendering any justifiable decisions in anybody's regards. I think he's proved that many times. So we see that the only possible way that Bobby can get a fair trial in any courts, not just in Chicago, is by having a jury of his own peers, and that the only justice would definitely be rendered when the people themselves make decisions in regards of revolutionaries.
Are the Panthers concerned with the other seven defendants as well as Bobby Seale? You mentioned Seale's name specifically.
Bobby is our leader, and we're most definitely concerned primarily about Bobby. The other seven defendants were involved in the so-called conspiracy, and we see them as being a very necessary factor in the case. But we're not going to put all of our weight on those individuals. We need our leader. Bobby is the leader not only of the black community, but the man is the leader of the white community too, if those people are talking about moving in a revolutionary fashion. We don't make distinctions between the white and black communities. These people consider themselves revolutionaries, so we say that they will have to react from a revolutionary standpoint of view. We don't support their anarchist strategies that they're so used to exemplifying, but we are concerned about those individuals.
Do you think that there is more that you agree on and disagree on as far as the white, middle-class, radical left and the Panthers?
I agree with that.
I think that we agree with a lot of things they do, but I couldn't say it with more things than we disagree with, you know. And when you say that, it's hard to say, and I don't even know if I want to say that really, because that's a hard question to answer because it's not specific enough. You know, there's so many groups. You have to get more specific and talk about specific groups and specific people. Because, like he said, there are a lot of people that are anarchists. We don't support that in any group. And I think that's the criteria we should use for judging people. You know, and I think that's the criteria we have to use for judging organizations, you know. That whether or not they, you know, support the ideology of spontaneity or whether they believe in, you know, revolutionary theory, you know, and putting that revolutionary theory into some type of revolutionary practice. And, you know, but some people don't do that. Those people that don't do that, and not saying whether they're more or less, those people that don't do that, we can't support that. We can't support anarchism on the part of blacks, whites, reds, yellow, anybody else. And I think that a lot of this, what we call anarchism, you know, I think it's, you know, on the borderline, a lot of it is even past the borderline of being a provocation instigated by some of these pigs, you know.
I think that we should reiterate on your first question. First of all, Bobby, as I stated earlier, is the leader of what people consider a vanguard organization, and that they earned that role not by choice but through many lives that have been lost as a result of our struggle. So that the other individuals involved in the trial or the conspiracy with Bobby are people that will have to take directions from people that have engaged in struggle and have obtained the vanguard role through their very actions. The very fact that these individuals are involved in the case with our chairman seems to reflect sometimes at critics from individuals sort of a racist attitude, and that the whole trial could be dangerously damaged if people see it in that light. So we most definitely do not advocate a split to that degree. All we want to do is to make sure that these people get a day in court where they will be judged by a reasonable, sane person and not a lunatic like the judge that he's got, you know.
What you're saying is you expect a conviction.
I'm saying that I expect a conviction not on the merits of the case, but because the man up there is not capable of giving anybody any justice. I think that the reason he's maintained his position so long is because of his kangarooism, because of his ability to railroad people through the court systems. I see that the whole systems of America is being stockpiled with lunatics and psychopaths, with fascists, all the way down from Attorney General Mitchell. And this is what we have to face, and I think it's up to the American public at large. I think that our position in regards to the other individuals in the trial brings on whether or not they're able to follow decisions handed down by people that are considered as the vanguard. And whether they accept that or not is a matter of fact. And that one of the criteria that they could use for judging whether or not we're the revolutionary vanguard is extended with the invitation to the Algerian cultural festival, whereas only the Black Panther Party was extended invitations out of all the other black organizations in America. So that when these people begin to refuse to follow directions handed down by leaders of the American Revolution, then we see them as being somewhat anarchist.
Well, are you saying that there's a difference in view about tactics, specifically in your relations with the police? In other words, what the radical whites are doing as compared to what the Panthers are doing?
There's a most definite difference. These people oftentimes promote situations where numerous of people are maimed, are brutalized, are killed, and we classify this as being criminal. And criminality is something that we definitely are opposed to, and that's why we take our uncompromising position against the police. So when they move in directions like that, they're actually part in part moving with the forces of repression.
Well, would you say that the demonstration today was in any way a provocation to the police or not?
Yes, I think it was definitely a provocation of the police, you know, because, you see, it was made clear through all the people that spoke for the Black Panther Party that we were down there for one thing and one thing only, to show massive support around Chairman Bobby Seale. And if anything, when there were even a chance, when there was even a chance of an outbreak, the party tried to quell this outbreak with its field marshals and the people that was on the microphone at the time that the outbreak occurred. But even with all of the vigilance that the party had displayed and most of the black people in the crowd, we still had some anarchists, whatever you want to call them, provocateurs, people that tried to overshadow what we were trying to do down there for Chairman Bobby. And even today, this evening, I found a situation where people in the in Babylon are trying to overshadow some of the good that the Black Panther Party is trying to do. And we're supposed to be opening up a free medical center with absolutely free medical care for the people on 16th and Springfield on the west side of Chicago. And a group of people on the west side of Chicago told us that they didn't want us to open that medical center. A group of young people over there. And they didn't give us any logical reasons that they didn't want us to open the medical center except that this area that the medical center was in, quote unquote, they ran it. This was their turf, you know. And what I'm saying is that there's nothing about the medical center that is not good for the people. And we don't know whether we're going to open or not, because we're not going to allow anyone to belittle us or to grab us by our revolutionary coattails and drag us down into humbug and gangbang style of attacking the problem. We're going to open the health clinic, no matter where we open it, we're going to open it, and we think that the people in that community will force these provocateurs and these idiots to allow the health center to be open in that community because it's going to do nothing good for the people.
Well, specifically with regard to what's been going on around the federal building and what's likely to happen the rest of the week, or even in the future, as long as the trial goes on, what are going to be the tactics that the Panthers advocate? Are there going to be more demonstrations?
We certainly hope to show massive force. We hope to surmount our numbers daily in the same reflection that you saw with the Huey Newton trial. This is one means for educating the people about the conditions that black people are subjected to within the fascist judiciary system of the United States of America. But I think the high points of what we're talking about could best be summed up by dealing with the criminal situation that we have been subjected to, not just with our coalition with our white counterparts, but more so with the judges, with the people that supposedly run the federal buildings. The federal building is a public facility. We have to obtain permits in order to have people come and witness the terror and the fascism that's being meted out against members of our party. And we're going to stop obtaining permits. The people have a right to be there, and we don't have to beg or ask them to give us approval for checking and seeing how they're passing decisions against our leaders.
What are you suggesting that you're going to do?
We're suggesting that we're going to be there in numbers, whether they like it or not.
Outside the building?
Outside and inside the motherfucker.
You're going to try to go inside the building without passes?
We don't have to have passes to get in there. The building is a public facility. It's supposed to be a building that represents the attitudes and the goodwill of the people. So we're going to make them exemplify that particular area of our Constitution. They cannot lock the doors on us. The people have violated all Bobby's constitutional rights, and we want the masses to be there to judge that situation as it is.
Given the situation as it is, wouldn't this be the kind of provocation that you want to avoid, you say you want to avoid?
We're not going there for any provocation. If people were going to war, I'm most certain that they would have guns and ammunition. We're not coming with any guns. We're coming to watch the so-called authorities of justice carry out their duty. So if there's any actual provocation, the provocation will come from the pigs like it always is. They're the ones that start the riots. They're the ones that go around with big long sticks and 357 Magnums whooping people, not the masses. We don't advocate anybody bringing any guns to the federal courthouse, but we do advocate the people assembling there massively to protest their dissatisfaction at the way that they're treating our chairman of the Black Panther Party and the other seven individuals that's involved in the so-called conspiracy, which is very absurd.
Fred, where does the Black Panther Party stand concerning the Weathermen, the SDS?
We stand way back from the SDS and the Weathermen because we believe that the Weathermen action, there's two actions, there's REM2 and Weathermen. We think they call them both national action. We think that REM2 is national action, Weathermen is national reaction, you know. We think it is anarchistic, opportunistic, individualistic, it's chauvinistic, it's custeristic, and that's the bad part about it. It's custeristic in that its leaders take people into situations where the people can be massacred, and they call it revolution. And it's nothing but child's play, it's folly, and it's criminal because people can be hurt. We say that they're doing exactly what the pigs want them to do. When they take people down and just do nothing, play around, and the pigs are prepared for this, and they'll wipe all of those young people out. We think these people may be sincere, but they're misguided, they're muddle heads, and they're scatterbrains. The only way we can show them is to criticize them like we're doing right now, and then leave from here and go to the federal building and have a demonstration that's to educate, a demonstration that is disciplined and organized, you know. And that's what we're going to have to do, and let them see the example.
Tell me why you feel the approach of the SDS weatherman is wrong.
I feel it is wrong, just as I said before.
No, don't tell me just you said before. That's why I asked you again. Just answer straight, because okay. In case we use this part.
I feel that is wrong.
Let me ask you again. Why do you feel that the approach of the SDS weatherman is the wrong approach?
I feel that is wrong because it's pig action. They're doing exactly what the pigs want them to do. They're leading people into a situation where it's an astronomical situation, too great for the people to deal with. It's a situation where you got a bunch of mechanical pigs with 357 magnums and shotguns and mechanical mace and all that type of thing. And then they're talking about they're going to carry on a revolutionary struggle. That's not revolution. It's insanity. It's a madness. It's nostalgia. And it's a massacre. That's what it's, potential massacre. That's what it is. And we don't support that because we say all power to the people. All the power is manifested in the people. We don't have any people whose lives we believe that should be thrown away.
Has the Weatherman SDS tried to get you to go on their side? Have you met with them, and what happened?
We met with the Weatherman faction of SDS several times. We've had ideological struggles, and we have ideological differences. So what we did was, we had the other faction of SDS that agreed with the Black Panther Party called for an alternate action, a well-disciplined action not to provoke pigs, an action not to talk about setting up confrontations with the pigs, because the people are not ready for confrontations. These confrontations that they have are premature. They're politically premature, and they're wrong because they commit people in a situation which they're not anywhere prepared for.
Well, why do you think the Weatherman SDS tried to link the Black Panther Party to its movement?
I don't know if it was actually the Weatherman of SDS. I'd have to say that it was the establishment press that is nothing but a tool of Warden Nixon's machine. We call him Warden Nixon because the whole world is a penitentiary, and he's just the warden of the whole world. And you see, these people are just an arm he uses for fascist oppression, you know. And I think today, these fascist news media might have did that.
Now, briefly, how would you sum up what the Weatherman SDS is trying to do and what you think of what they're trying to do?
I'd say that basically they believe that white people need to learn how to struggle, that they believe that these white workers need to learn how to struggle through confrontations. I'd have to say that basically I believe that this is incorrect. I believe that white workers have been struggling. They're some of the most violent people in the world. I believe that what they need is they need a redirection in their ideology and in their politics. They need to know who to struggle against. The workers need to start to begin to learn that their job is to struggle against the bosses. And until they do this, then struggle is incorrect. It's like no struggle at all. We say that if you don't struggle correctly, you shouldn't struggle. But you should struggle. We said dare to struggle and you dare to win. Dare not to struggle and you don't deserve to win. But we have to struggle properly.
What about the special approach of Weatherman, which seems to be violence?
Well, you see, I don't think it's really violence, you know what I mean? I think it's just a lot of folly. It's a lot of child's play. I think that to have violence, you've got to be able to cope with violence, you know what I mean? And that's what the Black Panther Party, a lot of people say we're violent. We're a self-defense organization that believes that the people should be educated to what's going on. We do defend our offices and we do defend our homes. This is a constitutional right. Everybody has it. Nothing funny about that. The only reason they get mad at the Black Panther Party when they do it is for the simple reason that we're political. And they don't want to admit this. There are a lot of young organizations around, but we are a political organization. We're an organization that understands that politics is nothing but war without bloodshed and war is nothing but politics with bloodshed. That it's just like you stretch something, and it goes, you can stretch things, they're going to be in another thing. If you stretch politics so long, it'll be war, and that's where we're at.
Well, then why do you feel it's so important for the Black Panther Party to disavow any real link with the Weatherman SDS?
I think it's important because there are a lot of people that watch the Black Panther Party for example. They observe us and participate with us. And if we can be connected up with this, then it would be very unadvantageous to the people, and it would be very unadvantageous to the struggle, in that people that claim to be revolutionary would be going down roads that they think might be revolution, but in fact they're not roads of revolution. They'll be going east when their intentions are going west. And also it's important because Chairman Bobby Seale is in town, and he's being tried by this fascist judge, Adolf Hitler Hoffman, you know. And he's being tried without a lawyer. And we've got to bring all of the attention and focus on this trial that we possibly can so that people can understand that these people are more capable of building gas chambers than Hitler ever was capable of building gas chambers. And we're going to have to get together. We're going to have some anti-gas chamber marches and some anti-fascism marches and some anti-Hitler Hoffman marches and some anti-Mussolini Attorney General Mitchell marches and some anti-Daley and some anti-Hammerhead Hammerhead marches. These are the things we're going to have to do. The people need to be educated. If they're educated, we can resist and we can stop this fascism.
Okay. All right. Thanks for giving
okay.
me that shot.
You.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right.
That's too hot, Bill. Hot? No, Howard.
Fred, the Weatherman branch of the SDS seems to be giving the impression that the Black Panther Party is with them.
No, the Black Panther Party is not with the weathermen. Let me explain very clearly that we believe that action like that is action of insanity. It's not a revolution even. You see, going out in the streets and getting people shot and killed and maimed, that's insanity. It's chauvinistic and it's custeristic. And when we say custeristic, we mean it's a type of action on the part of a leadership that would lead people into the same thing that Custer led them in. We believe that all action around that weatherman faction is going to turn out to be the Little Bighorn. And we're not getting involved in any Little Bighorns in the city of Chicago. The Black Panther Party intends to support anything that is disciplined, anything that does not provoke violence on the part of the pig power structure, because this is what they want to do. They want to kill some people. And these leaders are nothing but leaders who have custeristic tendencies. They will lead people into slaughters. And we think that that's it's criminal to the people. It's a crime against the people.
Cut it for a minute. That's real good. Now I want to put it just one other way. I'm going to ask you, why don't you... Fred, why doesn't the Black Panther Party support the tactics of the Weathermen SDS?
We don't support those tactics because they are acts of provocation and they're acts that the pigs, the policemen in the city, enjoy. They're doing just what the police want them to do. Our actions are just the opposite from that. We are educating the people to the wrongs that the pigs commit to the fascists around the country, and I think that's the proper way to do the thing.
Has the Weathermen tried to curry favor with the Black Panthers?
Right. We've had several discussions with the Weathermen. We've tried to talk them out of a lot of the anarchistic demonstrations that they have planned here. We tell them that we don't believe in demonstration for the sake of demonstration. We believe in demonstration for the sake of education, and we still go on that basic theory. We believe that people need to be educated if we're ever going to defend ourselves against the fascism that's running rampant in the United States of America and all over the world today.
How violent do you think the Weathermen are looking to become?
I don't think it's really a question of violence. I think we call it muddleheadedness, you know what I mean? I think how muddlehead will they become is a question. How masochistic and anarchistic will they become, you know what I mean? How much will they enjoy seeing people slaughtered in the streets before they come around and get them a plan of well-disciplined, well-organized type of education and demonstration where the people can be saved? We say all power to the people and all power is manifested in the people. We don't have any people to just throw away and throw their lives away. We think the people that throw the people's lives away in these types of counter-revolutionary folly, those people are criminals and they should be judged as such. And these people that commit crimes against the people should try them and indict them and sentence them.
Tell me, Fred, because the Black Panther Party feels this way and because the Panthers have been linked with Weathermen through the Weathermen, have you tried in any way to dissuade the Weathermen, to stop them from this kind of tactic?
We've talked to Weathermen time and time again, you know what I mean, and told them that we thought this was wrong. And let me say this, I don't believe these people are, I think they're some sincere people, but I think they're a little mixed up. That's why I be very careful about the word I use. I try to use words like muddle-headed, you know what I mean, and scatterbrains. That's what they are. There's some young people who really have some revolutionary fervor, but they don't know how to direct that fervor. So what we're going to have to do is try to rechannel that into some type of revolutionary discipline. I think if anybody looks at us, we're an example. We try to set examples for the people. The Black Panther Party is the most disciplined organization in the country, and the pigs still attack the Black Panther Party office. So that shows that we're still doing something to the power structure, but we don't have to do it in a way where we put people's lives on the line. That's not necessary, and we try to tell them that.
Okay, tell me what else you want to get off your chest.
Anything? I'd like to tell you, there's one thing that's very important to the people, that they see that so-called trial at the federal building is nothing but what I call a hecatomb. It's a public sacrifice where they're slaughtering the leaders of the people, and the only way we're going to stop that is if the people resist that, you know what I mean, because it's not a question of non-violence or violence, it's a question of resistance to fascism, a non-existence, and this is what we're going to have to deal with. We're going to have to go down to the federal building and deal with that judge, we call him Judge Adolf Hitler Hoffman, and deal with the Attorney General Mussolini Mitchell. All these people that have these fascist tendencies, they have this society is more technical than the German society ever was. They are going to be a better and more adequate gas chambers, and we've got to be prepared to deal with that. Education is the only way. We've got to educate the people.
You got anything else you want to say?
No, not particularly.
All right. Look, just want to do some...
We work with anybody and form coalitions with anybody that has revolution on their mind. We're not a racist organization because we understand that racism is an excuse used for capitalism. And we know that racism is just it's a byproduct of capitalism.
Everything would be all right if everything was put back in the hands of the people. And we're going to have to put it back in the hands of the people. Now, we say all power to all people. We say white power to white people. Brown power to brown people. Yellow power to yellow people. Black power to black people. X power to those that we left out. We say Panther Power to the Vanguard Party. When you leave here, you know what I'm saying? The last word, before you go to bed tonight, say, I am a revolutionary. Make that the last word. In case you don't wake up, then somebody might believe it, and you might, you know, end up in what they call a revolutionary happy hunting ground. Say that. I am a revolutionary.
They're constantly bothering the people. Anybody that's out there for the protection of the people happens to be in direct conflict with them. What makes them mad about it? What makes them mad about it is that they have black people and white poor people and red poor people and Puerto Rican poor people and Latin American Puerto Rican people of poor people of all descent. They had them caught up in movements based on racism when the Black Panther Party stood up and said that we don't care what anybody says. We don't think you fight fire with fire best. We think you fight fire with water best. We're going to fight racism, not with racism, but we're going to fight with solidarity. We said we're not going to fight capitalism with black capitalism, but we're going to fight it with socialism. We stood up and said we're not going to fight reactionary pigs and reactionary state attorneys like this and reactionary state attorneys like Hanrahan with any other reactions on our part. We're going to fight their reactions with all of those people to get together and have an international proletarian revolution.
Right on.
And that's saying all power to the people.
Right on.
That's saying that no matter what color you are, you're just only two classes. And that's saying there's a class over here and there's a class over there. And the reason that this class over here has never did anything to get this class off its back because this is lower, this is upper. This is the oppressed, this is the oppressor. This is the exploited, this is the exploiter. And these people in this class have divided themselves. They say, I'm black and I hate white people. I'm white and I hate black people. I'm Latin American and I hate hillbillies. I'm hillbillies and I hate Indians. So we fight amongst each other. And you've heard the testimony of pigs here. You got pigs of all colors, you know that. You got pigs that are white, you got pigs that are black, you even got pigs that are black and white.
So we always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You've got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the pastors are doing. That's what the pastors are doing all over the world.
We know they have our pictures. We know they're looking for us. We know they want us. But we're still saying that even though we couldn't be in a fit, as far as this system goes, on the mountaintop, we in the Black Panther Party, because of our dedication and understanding what's in the valley, knowing that the people in the valley, knowing that we originally came from the valley, knowing that our flag is the same flag as the people in the valley, knowing that our enemy is on the mountaintop, our friends are in the valley, we say even though it's nice to be on the mountaintop, we're going back to the valley. I want you to know that I want you to see. If you ever think about me, and if you think about me, niggas, and if you ain't gonna do no revolutionary act, forget about me. I don't want myself on your mind if you're not gonna work for the people. Like we always said, if you actually make a commitment at the age of 20, and you say, I don't want to make that commitment on this because of the simple reason that I'm too young to die, I want to live a little bit longer, what you did, you're dead already.
You have to understand that people have to pay the price for peace. If you dare to struggle, you dare to win. If you dare not to struggle, then goddamn it, you don't deserve to win. Let me say peace to you if you're willing to fight for it. Let me say it in the spirit of liberation. I've been gone for a little while. At least my body's been gone. You ain't got to repeat after me. At least my body's been gone for a little while. But I'm back now, and I believe that I'm back to stay. I believe that I'm going to do my job, and I believe that I was born not to die in a car wreck. I don't believe I'm going to die in a car wreck. I don't believe I'm going to die from slipping on a piece of ice. I don't believe I'm going to die because I got a bad heart. I don't believe I'm going to die because of lung cancer. I believe that I'm going to be able to die in the thing that I was born for. I believe that I'm going to be able to die high off the people.
I believe that I will be able to die as a revolutionary in the international revolutionary proletarian struggle. And I hope that each one of you will be able to die in the international proletarian revolutionary struggle, even in the living. And I think that struggle is going to come. Why don't you live for the people? Why don't you struggle for the people? Why don't you die for the people?
Welcome and thank you for joining us. And by us, I mean me, first of all. Hi, I'm Baratunde Thurston. I'm a writer, an activist, a comedian, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. But let's be real, I'm coming to you from Zoom. We're all in Zoom. That's just the way our life is right now. I'm joined in a powerful discussion about a powerful movie, Judas and the Black Messiah, by two incredible human beings. The actor, Daniel Kaluuya, who we all got to know pretty well and Get Out in the Black Panther, but who I first spotted back in Skins, because I was the person that watched that show and bootlegged it off of BitTorrent back in the day. Don't tell the authorities. We're also joined by the only child of the Illinois Black Panther Party chairman, Fred Hampton. That would be Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., who leads the Black Panther Party Cubs today. Daniel, Chairman Fred, what's good?
What's good, man?
Good to be here, brother. Right on.
Man,
thank you both for the time. Daniel, I would love to start with you. This is a big role that you've had to fill and the story of a life that many of us who grew up with some knowledge had never seen portrayed. And most Americans, most people in the world, don't really know the story of the Illinois Black Panther Party or Chairman Fred Hampton. What was it like for you to step into this particular character?
Humbling. I felt humbled and honored. You know what I'm saying? When I really took in the scope of his ideas, his concepts, his beliefs, his love for the people, I felt just honored to kind of spiritually step into this position, I mean, for this narrative, and to be a part of continuing the legacy, you know what I'm saying, in my medium, with, you have Chairman Fred Jr. doing it in the real world as well, you know what I'm saying? So it felt like an honor, and I just wanted to honor that, you know, and give all that I could.
It looked like you did, and it seemed like the role called for a lot from you.
Mm.
What have you kept with you? You know, sometimes you take on a role and you never quite leave it. Is there anything that persists within you from channeling and portraying this person?
The power of loving yourself and loving the people that look like you and loving your own community. That's something that really resonated with me. And also, I feel my taking in Chairman Fred, it's like he had an internal revolution, you know. He was free within his own mind, within his own spirit, within his own soul, and wanted to give the people the tools to be free within themselves, you know what I'm saying? To free themselves, you know, which is with education, with food, with legal aid, with all these tools that they put in place and strategies they put in place to promote individual internal liberation as well as community union is really what I took from it.
That's powerful to hear. Chairman Fred Jr., as I understand it, you were born just weeks after your father was assassinated by the police. Never having met him in person, seeing only video representations and audio representations, what was it like for you to see Daniel's representation of your father?
I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember all of my poems by heart, but I said in the poem before, I learned lessons from your legend on what a man was supposed to be. In regards to speaking to Chairman Fred, I was fortunate to come, you know, not to sound cliche, but war stories, you know, old brothers and sisters gathered around old garbage cans burning wood when they drinking their libations, and now, you know, just different, again, war stories are, you know, Chairman Fred's organized and everything. But to see that dialogue, and just not only just the result of we haven't seen on the big screen yet, but the process, sitting down with Daniel at literally at the house in which Chairman Fred Hampton grew up in, the Hampton House, at the table in which Chairman Fred, before he became Chairman Fred, they ate at, our process, our dialogue, really having our meetings on the, with our organization, the Black Panther Party Club, we say the streets are our office. Our roll calls are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We met in our office, just the streets, some of the same streets that Chairman Fred organized on. That process, then even to be in their office, and Daniel's, Dominique's, and others, their offices on the set, and just in this the process of the mutual respect, that, you know, saying the struggles, you know, saying what's creatively speaking advantageous, is, you know, what's politically speaking, what can be told, and what can, that whole process. So it wasn't just a reaction and end result, just to see it, you know, see that, like even the trailer, when you see the scene, we walk through to the door, you know, just flashback, and that, you know, how many times that scene was cut, just an emphasis on a walk, you know what I'm saying, and his respect of just the body language, not, you know what I'm saying, not just the cadence, the particulars, you know, even stuff that I noticed, I look back, that I take for granted, that, like I said, I tell people as a youngster, I was speaking, I was embarrassed, I was trying to hold my hands down when I spoke, until I actually seen actual footage of Chairman Fred when he spoke, how he moved his hands. Now he was respecting to pick up on that. And in fact, I think it was one scene when he was speaking, and it was like you may notice some of the Chicago accent or the stutter that it kicks in, and he was on it, you know. And I was hoping that the other people would say, "Oh, that was a mistake, take it again." But they ran with it, you know what I'm saying? It was phenomenal.
Yeah,
it was phenomenal. It's ongoing.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a real collaboration too. Like you said, you didn't just see the end product; you were sharing each other's worlds, visiting each other's offices, so to speak.
No doubt.
And I don't think that always happened, so I'm glad to hear it did with such an important story. There's a lot of trust involved in carrying this story. Daniel used the word humbled and honored in terms of playing this role. What was it like for you meeting the family through this process? And I heard you got put through some tests, some paces, some exposure. Could you share about some of that, please?
I felt meeting the family was necessary. It's how I felt about it. A story like this, and how the perspective that we wanted to tell it through, meeting the family and having them a part of the process and having them, to be honest, enrich what we are doing, you know what I'm saying, to imbue the narrative with truth, was imperative to me, and to everyone a part of the process. That's why I felt so it felt like everyone's just aligned, yeah, with the same kind of outlook in terms of like the importance of having Chairman Fred Jr., having Mama Kua just saying things and redirecting us and coming onto set and educating us during lunchtime. It was amazing. So we went to the office, and then we had a seven-hour, eight-hour meeting.
Yes.
And we kind of declared, Chairman Fred Jr. spoke to us and asked us to declare our intentions of why we're telling the story, who we are. I remember Mama Kua took me and Dominique to the side and asked us why we make art or what we feel the meaning of art is. And we had to go through that. And then Chairman Fred Jr., he took us to a place in Chicago that, you know, that, and I remember what he was saying. He was like, he said, if you're going to play the chairman, I want to see what you're made of. I think it was something along those lines. I don't want to misrepresent you, chairman, but it was something along the lines that if you're playing the chairman, I want to see what you're made of. And I let Chairman Fred take over for the story about where he took us.
Take us there, Fred Jr., Chairman Fred Jr.
There's character in character, you know, and I respect different fields, you know, saying whether it be that of a, you know, athlete, a freedom fighter, a thespian, what have you. And in our genre, you know, since a freedom fight is revolutionary, and many times it's the dynamics of it, the intricacies of it, you know, saying are negated for a number of reasons, because deal is with, we come from a cloth that there are many things that, you know, we can't talk about. You know, being a revolutionary, you know, there are some ingredients in the recipe of revolutionary that are given. You know, Chairman Fred's ability to weigh a theory and practice, to not just talk, you know, who authored and organized the Rainbow Coalition in the city that was, remains one of the top segregated cities in the country. And the dynamic of how he dealt with what we like to refer to as the unpoliticized street tribes, or not, some people refer to as the gangs. You know, his ability to deal with that in the people, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of times people have a sanitized version of the streets of the people, you know what I'm saying? They get it at a certain stage when it's been, you know, go through the process. Chairman Fred did groundbreaking moves, you know what I'm saying? Even, I tell people, even with the Rainbow Coalition, there were members of the Black Panther Party who could not relate to that. Why are you talking to these different individuals in the streets? And we're doing our dialogue, and this wasn't even planned, because, you know what I'm saying, these are background. There have been a number of attempts brought to us, whether it be book deals or movie deals,
okay,
we turned down. So this wasn't, we didn't even see it get to this stage. You know, we have war wounds from so many, you know, ill intentions or what have you, or lack of respect, and also lack of respect. So Chicago, which is infamously referred to as Chirac now, and we don't brag about that, but that's the political reality. It's a war zone, and it's a microcosm of what's happening in every colonized community. So I arbitrarily just ask, I say, pick up Google search, what is the worst neighborhood in Chicago right now at this present time? Because it flips. And Inglewood and North Carolina, in particular, they have to be real hot spots. And these are spots where we do a lot of our organizing. So it was Google, and they pulled up a place on Madison and Keeler, known as K-Town. And it just happened to be like 11 people were literally just shot. They were just shot that night. And, you know, we said, let's go. We're going to meet right there, you know. And, this wasn't some it wasn't simplistic. It's just to see a bravado call, but just the dynamics of respect, you know what I'm saying, because a lot of people see revolutionaries and shit. They think about the leather jackets, the berets, but there's the underbelly of, you know what I'm saying, of what a revolutionary is. How do you, you know what I'm saying, deal with this climate, you know what I'm saying? We refer to the lumping proletarian, the lumping, those are in the valley. Chairman Fred would say, you know, a lot of us talking about the mountaintop, we going back to the valley where the people are at. And we went to the valley, and, you know, so we went there, and the ground was literally still hot. The community was still out there. It was, you know what I'm saying, contradictions. You know what I'm saying? Contradictions were out there, you know. And we had our dialogue, you know. And again, Daniel, Dominique, you know what I'm saying, the conversation with our comrades there, you know what I'm saying, it was the setting, everything. And like we say, politics is like real estate. Time and location, all this, you know, it's important. And again, the setting was correct. You know, we had some real...
Ears up, eyes open, fist clench. It's Chairman Fred Jr. comes, he live.
Live.
Right on. This is comes to live. We experiencing a lot of political difficulties, you know what I'm saying, coming through live over Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, what have you.
Google apps. Facebook on here.
Oh, wow. So we're trying to do this, a weekly show here in Paris, France, and it's kind of eerie going through this right now, you know what I'm saying? You know, clear what's happening, but, you know, this is one week prior to August 30th, 2023, which will be the birthday of Chairman Fred Hampton. And we always experience an intensified counterinsurgency coming down right around the times of August 30th and December 4th in particular. And this is definitely, you know what I'm saying, but it's definitely going to be dealing with some technical difficulties. We'll put in context a number of things, like even the World Conference is being convened here past France at the time. Also, myself and comrades of the Common Hoops, Manuel, has spoke amongst others. Means that others have spoke today, and people, families from Brazil, Europe, Africa, has spoke today, and time is in regard, you know what I'm saying, not just the question of police terrorism, but also violations occurring, you know what I'm saying, to the land throughout the world. Also, put this in context of time too. This is Paris, as we speak, is a real, it's politically hot like a lot of places. But on the heels of the uprising that occurred, the young man was shot by police, and I forget what the typical suburb it was. Not to mention this, the dynamics about, you know, the world crisis in regards to discussion. The breaking news yesterday about the BRICS, Russia and China, you know, saying challenging the U.S. dollar. Most other things. So these are very intense times, and so I won't devalue anything. So I also must put the context of being here in Paris, France, the same location in which Malcolm X plane was allowed to land. And they said the government position was, you know, so they were was that they had concerns that something would happen here, didn't want to happen on that land. So I'm not taking for granted all this thing going on, but I just want to go on the record and say, really put the pedal to the metal, everyone. Upcoming 30th, you know, reshare this, repost it. Go to Chandler Fair Street Party on Instagram. See how you can support Real Deal ongoing Real Deal Rainbow Coalition. Go to SaveHappenHouse.org, donate button, cash out. Dollar sign, say the happy hour, that's what you can give, moving and grooving. Also, quench this salute to the forces there in New York, Harlem, New York. The street sign up put up today, yesterday, in Harlem, New York, 122nd Street now, known as the Black Panther Party Way. So, could command those forces there to go to work with us and push that to happen. What else? Street party. And again, we are here down here in France. You want to say something? I'm the comrade tag team. I want to repost it. But if you know, we are literally here chatting in this case all over what's going on. So, how many Connors? Update the only way we want
to. Free them all. Connors, Manuel, Freedom here. We're here in Paris, France, and it's just always an honor to travel with Chairman and have a comrade by my side as we go and meet with all of these international delegates from around the world that have come to join Alliance and against imperialism, against colonization, and everything that's really creating this oppression and genocide on our people. We're still fighting back, and that's sort of the theme that we keep hearing here amongst the people. That they keep fighting back and we're not stopping. So we're joining with a lot of resistance that's going on around the world. We hear the same things that are happening in Brazil and same things that are happening in Paris. There's mothers that we heard talk about their children being killed by violence, by the police, and we stand in solidarity with them, and they're really embracing us as we traveled so far to come here to share with them. And so it's always an honor to join with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. and the Rainbow Coalition and continue this work for our freedom and liberation and our self-determination. Thank you.
Right on. So we keep moving, we still moving and grooving. If we come down, we'll get you 210 cans in the stream. We'll take it back to the center of the drum. We're going to do what we do, but I don't want to again reiterate that my spirits are high. Again, devalue the quote unquote course and the timing of jamming the airwaves. You know, on this day again, 1 week on the countdown, 1 week prior to Chairman Fred's street party. So we look forward to everyone being there. That day we're going to let Clinton salute 12 o'clock at Ground Zero with Chairman Fred. Because the Mardi Gras was assassinated that. Y'all, so we're going to listen to Chairman Fred's speeches all the way up until the end, after the end. So we're going to keep y'all posted. Repost this, reshare this. On Instagram, Chairman Fred's street party. This is Chairman Fred Jr., Common Hoos, Emmanuel Freedom. What's your Instagram page?
Common Hoos Tattoos.
Common Hoos Tattoos. You know what I'm saying? Y'all keep updated. Again, you know what I'm saying? Hey, we must be doing something right for these attacks. You keep on coming at us, man. You know what I'm saying? We go on the corner, get us out of water, keep on swinging, though. So can you hear us up, ask with a fist clench, y'all? Countdown to August 30th. Free them all.
Free them all.
Free them all. Come on, players, anything with Jim Fred's speeches. We'll check back in a minute. Free them all.
Heads up, eyes open, the fist clenched. You see, the deal is this here. Now, although they did my daddy in one of the most direct graphic type of ways, the reality is that this system snatches or attempts to snatch all of our daddies in some sort of a way. And though the peers came in blasting, rat-a-tat-tatting through the front and back doors in 1969 at 4:30 a.m. on December the 4th, in which in aftermath, not only left my daddy, 21-year-old Chairman Fred, but 22-year-old defense captain Mark Clark as corpses. You see, they set the stage and laid the ground to, in whatever way, lay all of our daddies and all of us in general under the ground. Whether it be to string them up, lock them up, have them strung out, shoot them up, paying them up or parking them out, or straight up, point blank, putting them 6 feet under the ground. Now with that being said, this is from the young Chairman Fred to that of the Chairman Fred, as well as to all the daddies, fathers and papas, those who were in prison, as well as those who in which it was out of their control, just came up missing, as well as the forgotten. Dear Daddy, this is for you, man. Let the record reflect. For your son with nothing but love and revolutionary respect. With you, no commercials for Gatorade juice. No Armani suits, no nothing of the likes. For our son, the son to be a freedom fighter like Chairman Fred as opposed to wanting to be like Mike. Although you weren't here, you was always here for me. And I learned lessons from your legend of what a man was supposed to be. When they play with my mail, I couldn't get to no phone. Doing those hunger strikes and cold nights, I was never alone. Like you, they said, and I talk real fast and I move my hands. We love the people, oh, but we'll get up with that ass. On the streets, I always in the ear when they spoke on Chairman Fred. And in prison, I paid attention to what the old timer said. When they spoke on you, I seen that gleam in their eye. With just the mere mention of your name, I seen demoralized get high. No narcotics needed, in fact, high the people that you always said. As a kid, I came up looking forward to sideburns, fur hats, and the nappy head. From colleges to the communities, from the parlors to pool rooms, from the real Rainbow Coalition to a principal gang troops. In this struggle, you said you would pay the ultimate price. You anticipated prison and dedicated your life. Whenever the state signed your name, mama told me the truth. And that young lady, your great-grandbaby, she sends you a love. Well, she's a descendant of a diehard and a blessing from above. Now, inquiring minds want to know, how does it feel to be sighted by you? Being loved by the people and sweated by the you-know-who. If I could choose to do it all over again, I would choose to be your son. And by the way, that lady that you chose, that daddy, that was the one. really get caught with the state holidays, you know, but the deal is, we're going to shoot a video for Father's Day on the south side, east side, north side, west side. Again, you know, to show images of brothers from all walks of life. We're going to really seize the time. A lot of people, they refer to as Father's Day. We're going to do a video shoot. It's a piece we did called The Chairman Free on Father's Day, Dear Daddy. Now, y'all youngsters out there, we're doing some movie catch all in the park, getting cut the park, the club. And this is really going to contrast with all, again, the imagery that in places like, you know, Chirac and other, you know, other communities, there's a lot of propaganda put out about our people. As I said before, and I say it again, though the state, this system, they took out my daddy in a graphic type of way, point blank, you know, so we've seen, you know, so police have 99 rounds in the house. This system attempts or does take all our fathers from us one way or another by shooting them down, stringing them out, locking them up, you name it. We want to show you some images. It's rough out here. We rougher. The people rougher. You know, I'm saying rough in the way that we don't survive. You know, so we got community too. It's a struggle. We struggle every day to battle for our manhood, our womanhood, our childhood, basically our humanity. And, this is a piece that we want to get, you know, brothers from all walks of life to be in this footage. You know, so we coming to a hood near you. So again, inbox us, you know, tag us on a question on Facebook where we gonna be at. So we're gonna shoot some footage here on Father's Day. So we'll screen our brothers, you know, saying Father's Day, they gonna be in the video. So it shows that that we damaged, but we not destroyed. Again, we damaged, but we not destroyed. You know what I'm saying? And there are some images out there, and there's brothers out there that's, you know, saying, that's taking in, you know, saying these youngsters. That's not even necessarily biological fathers to these youngsters. But this is a video, you know, we're gonna call all the brothers, make sure y'all be on deck for this day. We're gonna be going through the hoods, you know what I'm saying? Just the basic everyday brothers, the people, you know what I'm saying, to continue this image that we've been given. Heads up, eyes on the fist clinch.